Next on The Old Mole, two interviews by Bill Resnick on community energy and how it can vastly reduce greenhouse gas emissions and save the planet. The first is with Rebecca Clausen. The second shorter interview is with Erica Idelson, and a continuation of an interview that began last week. We'll start now with Rebecca Clausen and Bill Resnick on community energy.
Hi, Rebecca Clausen. Welcome to KABU.
Hi, Bill. Thanks so much for having me on.
Rebecca, I just read an article about you on Grist, a webzine on the environment. The title was Meet the Mom Leading the Fight Against Fracking in Santa Barbara. That was a couple of years ago. As to that title, I'm not sure why Grist thinks it's so unusual and amazing that a woman can bear and raise a child and also be an activist and a leader, too. But that's another issue. Anyway, Rebecca is a great activist organizer. She's worked for a number of environmental organizations. She's involved in many other struggles, particularly in California, over who owns the sun and the wind, and who will run the emerging solar and wind energy systems, more specifically the battle in Santa Barbara to create Central Coast Power. It would take over the electric power system in the three counties and make Santa Barbara and the counties 100% renewable in a relatively short time. She's also on the steering committee for the Statewide Alliance for Community Energy. Rebecca, first, tell us how you got involved with fracking and California politics on water and fracking. What's happening now? And then we can discuss community energy and why it is so important.
Sure. So about 6 years ago, I moved back to my home county of Santa Barbara and not only saw that the climate had changed, but also that frackers had big hopes to develop and to frack in this county. So I joined with some friends who were also very alarmed, and we started organizing. We grew to a list of about 1,000 volunteers in a relatively short time, about a year, and decided to take our issue to the ballot to try to ban fracking and extreme energy production here in Santa Barbara County, because Governor Brown was not willing to do so. He was not willing to protect our communities and our groundwater. We took it to the ballot. We were defeated by about $7 million of big oil and industry money. But we didn't let that stop us. We carried on. We took all that momentum and started pushing for 100% renewable Santa Barbara County. We've joined with Ventura County and neighboring San Luis Obispo County to study what it would take to get all three counties 100% renewable in a short time, one or two decades. And that's how I got involved.
Uh-huh. As to the fracking, Santa Barbara suffered the great oil spill, about 10 or 15 years ago? There have been other oil spills. How do they get the water for this fracking, and how does that whole system work, and why is it so dangerous?
Sure. So our region has a long history of oil production. We were the first place where people tried to drill, or thought to drill, into the ocean floor, actually. And we suffered an oil spill 45 years ago, the first major oil spill offshore. And then again, in 2015, the Refugio oil spill was caused by an offshore oil pipeline leaking. Water is a large concern. We are still suffering from the drought, even though the state has gotten a lot of water this year. Santa Barbara County tends to be a little drier than the rest of the coast region. And so there's a lot of concern that we don't have the water necessary to continue with this dangerous forms of oil extraction that use a ton of water. So steam injection is one form that uses even more water than hydraulic fracturing does. And they're doing that extensively in our county, and they have plans to drill up to 700 more of these kinds of wells in the next year. So we're standing with North County community members who are facing these new oil projects in their backyards, trying to support their efforts to get these projects denied. We had a big win last year. For the first time ever, Santa Barbara County Board of Supervisors voted to deny an oil project. It was a 233 new oil well project that would have used steam fracking. And we want to continue that trend and stand up to the oil interests that would prefer to put our groundwater at risk.
You're getting a lot of support, right, from farmers and people, especially people who live in the countryside and aren't being served by city systems. Their groundwater is the most endangered, right? In fact, they're just taking the groundwater, even if it wasn't so toxic, what they spill and then re-inject. They're taking people's groundwater. It's unbelievable, actually, in a place like Santa Barbara.
Yes, it is very concerning. It's very concerning that we don't have a system in place that would prioritize best use for groundwater. Of course, the industry is also using recycled water, and that's what you'll hear over and over again from them. They're using reclaimed water from sanitation districts, but they also are using groundwater, and that is in direct competition with farmers as well as local residents who rely 100% on their wells.
Yeah, and streams and fish and wildlife and trees. This is KBOO Radio, Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Hour. Rebecca Clausen and I have been talking about how California, allegedly so green as on the environment, is allowing fracking all over the state, although it can be banned by local counties. And further, green California appears now to be undermining part of its former glory, a piece of legislation that allows cities and counties, in fact, any jurisdiction, the legislation offers the opportunity of community choice to take over electricity systems in their jurisdiction, which allows them both to lower costs and contract for themselves and construct sun and wind electricity generating facilities. Rebecca, you're also active in the Santa Barbara and the neighboring counties campaign to set up a community electric energy district. Why are you doing it? Why is it so important?
It's incredibly important. The timeline for climate change demands that we take action now and transition to 100% renewable energy as soon as possible. So I see this as a huge opportunity, not only to green up our act and lower our carbon footprint, but also to make a stand politically that we've had enough, that business as usual can no longer continue. And it helps the common person realize that it is possible to be 100% clean and green now. We don't have to continue to allow these fossil fuel companies to extract in our backyards at the expense of our health and well-being. So I see it both as a very tangible way of creating positive climate impact, but also as a strategic campaign move to help people visualize a clean, green future.
How does it get set up? It's a vote of the, is it the county supervisors, or is it the, is it a vote by the people, or both?
So the way we're doing it here, we've secured supportive votes from all three county supervisors. So then the jurisdictions will form what's called a joint powers authority, and that agency will be able to purchase power and distribute it to our residents. And our elected officials will be able to make decisions about what type of energy we want on the grid. So my job on the ground as an organizer is to make sure that the community's voices, the people demanding 100% renewable options, are heard loud and clear so that our elected officials know that that's what we want out of this project.
And you can also have the power, my understanding is, you have the power to raise resources or bonding or however it would be done to construct your own facilities in all over the county. And generally these would be, we talked about it earlier, rooftop solar is what you're pushing for. That is really small installations, but all networked and confederated. Tell us how that would work.
We've mapped out solar PV resources sufficient enough to generate all the electricity we would need, at least for the Santa Barbara County portion, where we do mostly rooftop parking lots and then a few solar farms here and there to supplement. So what we would do is generate, store, and distribute 100% renewable energy right here within the region. The beauty of community choice energy is that we can become a power providing agency, raise revenue, and then reinvest that revenue in local generation projects.
You know, in California, you can also reinvest, my understanding is, into changes in transportation systems or putting up light rail or other ways so you're making a clean energy transit system. Not completely, because you need some electric cars, but it seems to me that community energy is just this wonderful recipe for creating a public agency that will make sure that of conservation, of transit, of changing agricultural patterns, and of building a culture where people see themselves as really supporting in many ways this much healthier environment that they would live in, as well as paying less for the electricity.
Absolutely. There's a huge amount of potential with community choice energy. It's a very powerful project if done right.
This is KBOO Radio, Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole. I'm talking to Rebecca Claussen, who is a community activist struggling with the frackers in Santa Barbara County and mid-state. We've been discussing both the opposition to fracking as well as the wonderful, actually, consequences of going towards community choice and community energy. Rebecca Claussen, who's the opposition and how are they operating? And what's Jerry Brown been doing in all of this?
Governor Brown must be experiencing some cognitive dissonance right about now. I do believe that he cares about climate change and is alarmed and wants to see a livable climate for future generations. But at the same time, he's fast-tracked oil fracking in Kern County in the last couple of years. He allows oil wastewater to be used to irrigate even organic crops. The Aliso Canyon natural gas explosion last year, he refuses to shut that facility down, even though there are still thousands of people who are sick and getting nosebleeds 18 months later. His sister is on the board of Sempra Energy, the parent company for SoCal Gas, responsible for that disaster. So there are just many ways that Governor Brown has not been the environmental or climate champion that he's perceived to be. Another aspect of this that ties into what we're talking about is the fact that he is committed to the current cap and trade system, even though the last 2 years has proven ineffective at decreasing emissions. There's a study that recently came out showing that environmental justice communities, frontline communities, have actually suffered under our cap and trade system. But Governor Brown just seems like he's got blinders on. He wants funding for the bullet train that would allow people to ride a speed rail from the Bay Area to LA and back. Meanwhile, we don't have the time to experiment with this market-based approach. We need him to use his executive authority to keep dangerous fossil fuels in the ground and put all of his time and effort into supporting communities that want to generate 100% renewable energy like ours. So to your question about what he's done on community choice energy, Governor Brown's appointed the members to the Public Utilities Commission, and they've made a few important decisions that promote the utilities over programs like community choice energy. One example is the transmission access charge. So say we generate solar PV electricity for 10 cents a kilowatt hour. The state requires that we tack on another 3 cents just because SoCal Edison has to maintain their transmission grid. Even if we don't use their grid, they're charging us for it. That's one way that the Public Utilities Commission has made community choice energy projects and locally generated electricity a lot harder. It's harder to compete on the market when we're being penalized by such a large amount. Another example is the power charge and difference adjustment. Every customer who was ever on the grid, a customer of the major utility, is charged retroactively when they decide to leave and go with a community choice energy project.
They're charged retroactively. And what's the charge?
I can't recall the exact amount right now. There are several different small charges that add up to basically penalizing community choice energy projects and making them less competitive on the market with these dirty fossil fuel utilities.
And the Public Utility Commission in California appears to be captured by the three big investor-owned utilities and their financiers. I think you can't ignore the fact that Goldman Sachs and the rest of it makes a very steady, it's sort of their baseline profit is in financing electricity, because depression or not, whatever happens to the rest of the country, those charges are paid. We can't, this modern society can't do without electricity. And the financiers don't want to lose their huge bite on the system. On the other hand, there are people like you and thousands of others who are challenging that whole system of basically crony capitalism. Rebecca Claussen, it's great what you're doing. It's so important. You're doing a lot to guarantee that there is a future. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Bill. I appreciate it.
And next on The Old Mole, we have a short interview, the second part of an interview on how the big electric companies are trying to destroy community energy. That aired last week. This is the end of that interview with Erica Idelson, who is a writer, community activist in Oakland, California, and is the co-founder of the Alliance for Community Energy. That's the California Alliance for Community Energy.
One final issue. The big utilities see community choice aggregation as a tremendous threat to them, and of course it is, because if people start getting their energy from their local democratically run supplier at lower rates, it puts the not just the utilities out of business, but the big financial firms. Financing public utilities is a tremendous source of profit for the bond market. It's regular, it's riskless, and it makes huge amounts of money, and everybody pays in. They're staunchly against community energy. And in California, it seems to me it's very visible. Tell us about the opposition and how Jerry Brown, who has a good record on most things, has been very disappointing.
Well, there has been very strong monopoly utility opposition from day one, ever since the enabling legislation was passed in 2002. And so it took a good 6 or 7 years before the first community choice program was even able to launch, because there was so much pushback and kind of smear campaigns and disinformation to really try and prevent that first program from launching. But once that first program did launch and was pretty immediately successful after a few years, then it was a different ball game, and other programs started launching all over the state. But the utilities are still constantly coming up with ways to try and undermine what we're doing. Sometimes that's at the local level with a particular program, and there have been a couple of instances where they've sponsored statewide legislation. They have failed both times. They have spent millions and millions of dollars.
I read $46 million on one initiative.
Yeah. In 2010, they spent $46 million. They lost.
They lost, and our side has about 100,000. That was...
Right. So that shows, you know, people get it. People want it. They tried again a few years later with a bill in our state legislature, and that also failed. And now they're kind of doing more devious things. We'll start to get too technical for people, but there's things that they're doing with the Public Utilities Commission, where they're getting that commission, which, as you mentioned, is appointed by Governor Brown, and they're getting the commission to rubber stamp a lot of bogus charges that they're slapping on people's bills, so that even after you leave a utility for your local community choice program, that utility can still continue to slap a monthly exit fee on you, sort of as a penalty for having left the utility. There's a lot of complex reasons about why they're able to get away with that, but it's actually amounting to hundreds of millions of dollars being lost every year, transferred from community choice customers back to the utilities. So that's a major problem that we still need to fix, and that's at this point one of the biggest ways that the utilities are still working against this. They kind of talk out of both sides of their mouth, and they say, oh, you know, we're neutral on community choice. But, you know, as you mentioned, they're not neutral, because they're losing all of their customers. Now, they're not going to completely go under as a result of community choice, because they still deliver the electricity through their transmission lines, and they still do the billing. So what's changing really primarily is the procurement, so that the community choice program is making the decisions about where the electricity comes from, which is the most important thing. But the utility is still carrying the electricity over its line. So they still have a role to play, but it's not as profitable a role as they're accustomed to, and they're no longer a monopoly as they're accustomed to. So now people who live in a community choice jurisdiction have a choice. They can either stay with their utility that they've always had, or they can switch over to the new community choice program and give that a try. And sure, of course, a monopoly does not want to stop being a monopoly. So yes, there is opposition.
Yeah, despite all of their public-spirited announcements and pretensions, I just want to say one final thing. Jerry Brown did take on Trumpism and says we're going to continue along our path, and invited other states to join them, including, of course, one of the states right adjacent to it, a little bit north, is Oregon. It's not clear to me. We do not have community choice legislation in Oregon. It would be wonderful to have it and to give communities that opportunity. We'll have to talk about that another time. It was really wonderful to talk to you, Erica Edelson, And check out her blog, and she writes on a lot of things, and the pieces I've read have all been really interesting. How do we get to your blog?
Oh, well, my website is ericaetelson.com, E-R-I-C-A-E-T-E-L-S-O-N. And I would also invite people who want to learn more about community choice energy to go to cacommunityenergy.org. That's the California Alliance for Community Energy website. And feel free to get in touch. If people in Oregon want to start trying to move this forward, we would be happy to support you.
Thanks so much for talking to us today, Erica
Thank
Edelson.
You.
Yes.
Okay.
So long.
Bye-bye.